Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Troy Schmidt, he's written for various television shows, including Dennis the Menace, Heathcliff, Flintstone Kids, The Mickey Mouse Club. He also adapted Max Lucado's Hermie the Common Caterpillar. He is also the producer of the American Bible Challenge, which is a game show on the Game Show Network. But for LifeQuest, he is also the author of a book of the same name, The American Bible Challenge, a daily reader. Troy Schmidt, welcome to LifeQuest.
Thanks, Dwight.
Well, I need for you to tell our listeners who may not be acquainted with the American Bible Challenge, which is seen on the Game Show Network, what is it all about?
Well, it's three groups of three contestants. They get together and they decide that they're going to be asked questions based on the Bible. We try to have some fun with it, with different categories that not only challenge you, but also kind of bring a laugh at the same time. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure they have fun. These three teams are vying to win money for their charity, and ultimately, when it's all over, they could win up to $140,000 for their charity.
I was thinking about all of this, and TV history is all about game shows. I mean, I am ancient enough, Troy, to remember the $64,000 question and to tell the truth. And, I mean, even the journalist Walter Cronkite actually was the host of a game show in the early 1950s. And many of these, like Jeopardy and things like that, have had Bible questions. But I've got to tell you, Troy, I never thought that one day there would be a game show entirely on the Bible.
I share your shock. I'm the same way. Ever since I got the first call that they were doing a pilot for this was back in February of 2012, I couldn't believe it. I was going, really? They're doing a Bible quiz show? And they were, GSN has been behind this all the way. Here's why I think it works now. There are so many stations, cable stations,
right,
that are trying to attract attention. So there's a lot more niche programming.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, the History Channel has been so successful.
Right.
That would, with the Bible, something like that, they've made some Jesus movies over time, but
right,
never could they commit that many hours to it.
Yeah.
But this is, Game Shows Network answer to it. They looked at their demographics. They said there's a lot of people in the South and the Midwest to watch the show. They traditionally are faith-based people,
mm-hmm,
so let's do programming for them. And their gamble really paid off.
And that's one of the questions I wanted to ask. Is this game show a success TV ratings-wise?
It is. When you have a million viewers,
mm-hmm,
with all the competition that's out there, I mean, there's nearly 200 things at the same time that you can be watching. If you get a million of those viewers, you are considered a success. So the ratings from last season certainly indicated that there was an audience for the second season,
mm-hmm,
and we're seeing similar numbers, so we're getting those fans back.
I was talking to Roma Downey recently about she and her husband's, new series on the History Channel. And she was pointing this out, the fact that, years ago when she was doing Touched by an Angel or something, you didn't have this cable business where you had all these choices. And I lived in the UK for a while when we had three channels. So life is different.
It is certainly different. And I think that my hope through all this, as we see the success of the Bible and the American Bible Challenge, that more networks are going to find ways to attract this audience.
How did you connect with, who is your host, Jeff Foxworthy?
Well, I connected with him the first day that we were shooting the pilot. I was, I'm sitting out here in Florida, Orlando, Florida, and I get a call from a friend of mine. He said, I just had lunch with someone in Los Angeles,
mm-hmm,
and they're putting together a show, and they're looking for someone to be a part of this. They need somebody with Bible background to be a part of this game show. And so I connected with the executive producer. Within 24 hours, I'd been hired, and I was making my way out there within a couple weeks. I was on the set. I had been asked to be the expert on the show.
I see.
so that during the format of the show, Jeff would turn to the Bible expert so that all of that didn't rest on him. And then I would respond to the question and say, well, Jeff, the reason that's in the Bible is all that stuff. And so he and I were actually on the pilot together.
Uh-huh.
And thankfully, the people that they tested it with said, we love the show, we love Jeff, but that Bible expert really slows things down. And so my on-air career ended, and my behind-the-scenes career picked up. So.
And you're happy with that?
Oh, yeah, I am. Because you know what? I was going to be afraid that for the rest of my life I was going to walk into restaurants, people go up and say, hey, let me ask you some Bible trivia questions. And I'd be like, oh, no, I got to be smart now.
Yeah. Now, those who win on this show, it goes to a charity. That's correct?
That's right. The one, they choose a charity, and it whatever one that they choose. You'll see this on Thursday, the show that runs this week, some rabbis. And the rabbis are from New York, and the charity goes toward, like, the areas that were hit by the storm, Sandy.
Oh, I see.
Others have little outreach ministries that they have maybe in cities.
Mm-hmm.
There's a couple on there from Detroit that are trying to help the inner city and help people there reach out to kids. So, yeah.
Oh, very good. Any trouble finding contestants?
No, not at all. I don't know the exact numbers because I wasn't at all the places, but they had thousands of people show up.
Really?
And we only have enough for three teams and six shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to really narrow it down, and I think our casting people did an excellent job.
Very good.
There's some fun groups. We have a group of nuns, and like I said, a group of rabbis.
Uh-huh.
There are wrestlers, a group of Christian wrestlers that are on. We have a group of Christian rappers. And we even have some of the women from Women of Faith, Sheila Walsh.
Really?
And others are on the show, and so we challenge them with some tough questions.
Excellent. Now, I have in front of me the book. It's called The American Bible Challenge Book, A Daily Reader.
Right.
How did that happen?
Well, I had... when I was finished with the show, I mean, we were so excited when we finished that first season that I came back and I just couldn't stop thinking. And so I started to take the questions from one show, and I broke it down into seven parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed the fact that there was an opportunity to get this information on the show. But I know that behind the information is inspiration. You know, there's something about the story of, say, Sarah that is more than just a yes, no, true, false.
Right.
But there's really something about her life that may speak to people. And when I was that expert sitting off to the side, I could kind of interject that during the pilot.
Yeah.
And I was missing that. And Jeff at times is really good about finding those things and talking about it, but he can't do it with every question.
Right.
So I started to look at the different questions and say, you know what, here's the message from that passage that we asked a question about.
Yeah, beyond the question.
And, right. So I started to write out from the first season different sort of daily thoughts with all of that. And I also knew that the heart and soul of what the American Bible Challenge is all about is questions. And so in addition to the inspirational thought came five questions. So when they read the Bible passages that we've asked them to read, we have questions also that are from those passages or about that topic.
Yeah.
And here's what I've heard. Parents have been saying to me, we've been using this as a devotional for kids. I didn't even think of that. I was just thinking of adults. But they said, we've been using it with our kids. We read the devotional thought, and then we read the passages, and then I ask them the questions, and then they try to answer them.
Mm-hmm.
So there's inspiration, there's challenge kind of going on at the same time.
Sure. I've got to tell you, Troy, in the interest of transparency, I teach a couple of religion classes at a parochial school, and as soon as I got the book, I took it to class, and I began to use it as not only a devotional, but the kids love the questions and to challenge each other. And to let me just tell the listeners here, for instance, in week one, day two, you know, a friend's request from the burning bush, and it's, of course, about Moses and God seeking out and how Moses answered. And it's very positive, very helpful. And then today's Bible challenge and these five questions that Troy just mentioned. Whose flock was Moses tending when the burning bush appeared? On what mountain did the burning bush appear? And the kids love it. And and I can really resonate with those who want to use it with their young people as a devotional in the home or elsewhere.
You know, I always I sometimes hear this, and it seems at times that we're trivializing the Bible, but when we ask these sort of questions. But I think it's exactly what you've just said. I think the trivia gets them interested,
right?
And then it gets them to open the Bible, read it for themselves, find the answers, and the next thing they know that they're being inspired by the Word of God. And that's what my hope is, not only for the show, for the book, and for all of this that's associated with this.
Troy Schmidt, you're also a pastor.
Yeah.
And what kind of response from parishioners that you, from Christians that you know? Positive, negative, both?
Oh, it's been very, very positive. I'm at the First Baptist Church of Windermere. We're just outside of Disney and and outside of Universal. So people, there are a lot of people here are very supportive. And, you know, I have to go away for 5-6 weeks to go do the show every season and then come back. And they've just been very understanding and supportive. And I'll post things on Facebook and they'll repost it and they'll get their friends to watch. And and so they're my feedback a lot of times, and they're just very encouraging.
Very good. Folks, the book is The American Bible Challenge, A Daily Reader, Volume 1, which gives us hope for more. It's by Troy Schmidt. It is also it's a publication of Thomas Nelson. How can our listeners get a copy of the book? Where can they find it?
Well, this was exciting. The other day, I was just over here at Barnes & Noble with my wife. We were out on a date, and we just walked in, and there it was. So
really?
It's at Barnes & Noble. It's online at thomasnelson.com. It's on Amazon. Family Christian bookstores, you know, anything like that. It's been available just about everywhere, so it's hard to miss it.
Great. Troy, thanks for being with us today on LifeQuest.
Well, I appreciate it. Dwight, thanks for taking the time to talk about the show and to talk about the book.
I'm Dwight Lainhoff. I'll be back in just a moment.
Joining us today on LifeQuest, here is host Dwight Lainhoff.
In this segment of LifeQuest, Bob Mix and I talk to Stephen Carter about one of his latest books.
Our guest today is Stephen Carter, author of the book This Is How Love Works, 9 Essential Secrets You Need to Know. Now, this book is not intended just for Christian audiences. If you as a Christian have a friend that may not be a church attender, may not even be Christian at all, this is a book that would not be offensive, but would be very helpful. Stephen, it seems as I journey through your book, it seems like this would really be helpful for people that are struggling, not just in marriage, but even with singleness.
Well, yeah, because the premise of the book, I mean, the way it got started, essentially, when I was, I mean, really thinking about my own relationship, my own marriage, and, you know, just this idea that people are single longer and longer, out there in the world longer and longer, postponing families longer and longer, getting really good at being single. And the better we get at being single, sometimes the worse we get at being partnered. You know, people are so focused on their careers, because they have to be. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's trying to make a living. Things get more and more expensive. You know, there's so much more stress for everyone. And what happens is that our single life skills get in the way of our partnership skills. And it's something none of us would have ever imagined. We think, you know, we make ourselves the best person we can be, and then, you know, doing that brings a loving partner into our life, hopefully, and then, you know, and then the assumption is that just everything is easy after that.
Right.
But to the contrary, what happens is we wind up living single. And acting single and speaking single and thinking single long, even when we have partners. And we do this, you know, in the beginning of a relationship and in the middle, and we do it when we marry, and we do it 20 years down the road. And I think it was really important to point that out to people, you know, to say to people, hey, you're still being single in this relationship, you know. I mean, now, this is not a book about cold fusion. This is not how to melt into a partnership so that you and your partner are indistinguishable from each other. That's not a healthy model, and that's certainly nothing I would ever encourage. I mean, but it is a book about how to create a healthy interdependence where it is clear to your partner and is clear to you that you indeed are in a partnership. And this kind of stuff really happens at the smallest level, which is why the first chapter of the book is Notice the Small Stuff. Because, you know, you have to have love, you have to have commitment, you have to have fidelity, you have to have, you know, trust. But those are the big pieces in relationship. When those big pieces are in place, you have your admission into part two of relationship. And part two is just a small stuff process. Part two is life. You know, people think that those big pieces are going to guarantee the future of a relationship. And yet what we're seeing now is that they don't. All they do is they get you in the door. You know, so like we spend our whole lives thinking about those big pieces and trying so hard to get those big pieces, and yet, and then discover, you know, on day one of finding that, that it's not enough. All it did was give you the chance to have a partnership, but it doesn't give you a partnership.
Well, what are some of the, give us an example, or examples, I guess, of small stuff that you're talking about.
Okay.
Yeah.
There are the really small things, and there are things I call the big small stuff also. The big small stuff being things like your partner's anxieties and the fact that you and your partner don't have the same anxieties, and you want your anxieties and concerns to be taken seriously, and yet how many of us, you know, kind of poo-poo our partner's anxieties and concerns, kind of don't really attend to them, make fun of them, et cetera, et cetera.
Or just want to really fix them right quick. That's
right.
My
right.
wife shares something, I say, well, do this and this and this, and I'm on to something else.
Right. But have a thermostat. You know, you like the thermostat at 68, your partner likes it at 72. So here's what happens. Your partner sets it at 72 and falls asleep. So you tiptoe out, you change it to 68. And then in the morning, you wake up and your partner's got a thing in his or her throat. And she's and like, how did that happen? Why is it so cold in the room? And it's cold because the thermostat's at 68. You know, the thermostat game. And then and everybody's angry. I mean, that is small stuff that has a big impact on relationships. The piece of cake in the refrigerator where your wife said to you, you know, please don't touch that cake. I know I'm saving it for when the blank, you know, when so-and-so comes over. And yet, you know, you forget that your partner said that, and you open the refrigerator, you see the piece of cake, and next thing you know, the fork is out, you're taking a bite off of it, and then your partner goes to get the cake 2 days later, and there it is with a big fork full chopped off of it. That makes people crazy. It makes people feel like you're not listening, like you don't care.
That's where the middle of the toothpaste comes in and all that.
This is the stuff, you know, the toothpaste cap, the socks, you know, the remote control, windows open, close, the blinds, up, down.
The little piles of stuff.
The piles of stuff, the stuff that's sitting out, you know, your stuff, my stuff, is any of this our stuff? These small things send huge messages. You know, in the world of relationships, there is no such thing as too small to be unimportant. And I think that the worst advice anyone can give you in relationships is to not worry about the small stuff. I mean, you know, in life there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of times that that's very applicable, but in relationships it's not applicable.
So what do we do when we start noticing these little, because they're probably going to, you know, like, what is that where you put another thing on the camel is going to break his back. These begin to add up to where they're, it's no longer, we're arguing about things that aren't really the issues.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what happens all the time. And that happens, you know, and I give examples of that in different chapters, you know, in the different, you know, in the different ways that that keeps happening. I mean, the first thing is to understand that it is important. I mean, people just don't think it's a big deal. You know, some people are doing it because they're trying to control things. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. They're trying to punish their partners. They're angry. They're whatever. They're kind of wedded to being difficult. But some people do it because they just really don't think that it matters. I can't change the people who are trying to control or manipulate their partners. You know, I mean, only a, you know, maybe a counselor or a therapist, you know, will be able to reach somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I can help wake people up. And I think that what This Is How Love Works is a big wake-up call. And that's why I put so many specific examples in the book, so to make sure that everyone could see themselves in this.
Mm-hmm.
And because that's how I see this. So it's the fact that, yeah, this little stuff is huge. I mean, my publisher is 80 years old, and he's been married probably for 50 of those 80 years. And he has been publishing my books for almost 20 years, and many of them, you know, really very successful books, big bestsellers. And yet this book is his favorite book because he sees himself in this book.
Uh-huh.
And after 50 years of marriage, he said that over a weekend, he was doing little things differently.
Wow.
And I was too embarrassed to ask him what that was, but, you know, but when an 80-year-old guy tells you that after 50 years of marriage that all of a sudden he's doing something differently after reading, you know, your book, that's a big deal.
You know, you've gotten through, yeah.
Again, the book is This Is How Love Works, 9 Essential Secrets You Need to Know. It's by Stephen Carter. He's a well-known author on marriage relationships, and it is available at your nearest bookstore and, of course, on Amazon.com. I'm Dwight Lainhoff. Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee, 37930.